Now, there's nothing we're going to say today that is as the world knows it. Probably not a single word. And so it would sound very strange to anyone not prepared. And as I look around at the faces, I know we are prepared. Now let's take a child running on the street and an automobile comes along and knocks the child over. And this child is now unconscious. This would appear to be an event that happened because the child was careless or the driver was careless. Now, it is nothing of these things. And in order to prepare for an understanding of the healing of children, we must learn what a child is. Because a child is none of the things that we have been led to believe a child is. There is a force moving through the world independent of the man who drove the automobile, independent of the child, which against the will, against the conscious awareness of both the child and the driver, brings them together and they crash. And the child is hurt, and the law penalizes the driver if it was not his fault. But there is a force moving through the universe which brought it about, totally independent of the victim and the cause of the accident. Now, this impersonal cause is also responsible for that driver being present on the earth, is also responsible for that child being present on the earth. And unless you come into an awareness of this impersonal cause, you too will be drawn into false conclusions given to you by your eyes and your brain. And because of your false conclusions, you will miss the mark. You will miss the truth, and you will miss the teaching which Jesus brought to the earth, and which some since then have brought to our attention. Now we have a child in a sick room, crying. And you have every desire as a mother or grandmother or friend to help that child. Why is it crying? Something hurts. What hurts? And you put your fingers on the child's ribs or the child's stomach to find it. But you can't really find it, because that's not what's hurting. Something else is hurting. The same force that works through the universe and comes through something and eventually touches this child's mind and then externalizes itself as a pain. You're only touching the final end of that long chain of circumstances. You're never really getting to the basis of the child's problem. Now, we want to get to the basis of the child's problem. And to do it, you might have to see that you were something else before you were a child. And that just as you may be a child again in another incarnation, that child that you will be will be totally unaware of its previous life, which is this one. That child will never know that you were such and such in this life, that you did certain things, that you went to certain places, that you had certain relationships and experiences. That child will be as completely unaware of your present self as your present self is unaware of your past self. Now we will, unless we make a transition, be children in another human experience. And again, the world will miss the mark with us. They will not know who we are. They will treat us as a new arrival, freshly minted. They will treat us as a human birth. But we will really not be that, for here we are right now. Now the children that we're talking about in this present parenthesis, they have also gone through the various past reincarnations, and they have come to this place, and the world knows them not. The world sees them with human eyes and says, this is a child. Certain color, certain size, certain weight, a certain quantity and quality. And yet, if that child could speak the truth of itself, it would tell you of many, many lives it has lived, many things it has done, many places it has been. And so to try to treat this child as a child is overlooking the reality of the identity of this child. And as long as we continue to do that, we're always treating the surface aches and pains. And one day this child grows up and it dies. It dies because it has never lived. It has never touched life itself, and it must die to return again to find the life that it did not touch. Now you, at this present moment, are nothing but a little child grown into an adult form. And unless you know where that form came from, you will never know yourself. Let's go back before you were a child. Let's go back to your parents. And let's see that they too, probably unaware of their true identity, thought they brought forth a child into this world, a human child. Now when they did that, that which had no reality in God married to that which had no reality in God, two human beings of the flesh, not in grace, not in spirit, not in truth, not in reality, but in a false human consciousness, brought forth what? What could a false human consciousness bring forth but another falseness, an outpicturing of the false human consciousness? And that outpicturing became their consciousness externalized, and they named it their child. It was you. They named you their child because their senses said, here is flesh and blood that we have brought forth. The false human consciousness brought forth an appearance called a child. Now the false human consciousness can bring forth nothing but a false appearance. And the child which they brought forth was a false appearance. And that child, because it was a false appearance, had to undergo the false experiences of itself. It had to undergo that which was not created by God. It had to undergo diseases. It had to undergo experiences which were not God created. It had to undergo the errors that were embedded in the consciousness that had brought it forth. And this child, this new appearance that we all were, was not really ourself. It was instead the bringing together of two false consciousnesses to create a third. We were that third consciousness, really born of two false consciousnesses united in thought. And because of their false consciousness, they would manifest in it all of the good and all of the evil of this world, and this coming through the false consciousness of the parents becomes the living human self called a child. Now, up to a certain age, this child is not itself at all. It is nothing more than the externalization of the consciousness of its parents. Although it would seem that the 9-month period had finalized and a child was born, this too is the appearance in the false consciousness. And that which began seemingly in the 9-month period continues as the consciousness of the parents, and it continues to grow because it is the consciousness of the parents unfolding. And always, what is really happening? There is an impersonal mind outside of the false consciousness of the two parents, and it is forming its false concept of the divine image and likeness of God. It is transferring that false concept through the minds of the parents. And as that false concept of the universal false mind moves through the parents unfolding, the child grows. It is still not itself. It is world belief formed through the mind, the consciousness of the parents, into another appearance. And the parents are completely under the belief that they have brought new life into the world, and they haven't. They haven't yet touched their own life, let alone bringing new life into the world. They are perpetuating the human illusion. Now, that human illusion called a child, which we were, continues, and at about the age of 12, we begin to catch up with ourselves. That consciousness which we had developed in our past lives begins to edge its way through the consciousness of our parents. They had held us in bondage completely to their beliefs. Beliefs they didn't know they even had. For example, there are certain diseases which are transmitted from the mother to the child. Let's see, I think it's mononucleosis. Maybe the one which the mother transmits only to her male child. If a mother has a child, there's 1 out of 1,000 that is born with cystic fibrosis. If a mother has such a child, that one out of a thousand, almost inevitably, will die within 7 years. 95% of them die within 7 years after their birth. And yet, what gives them cystic fibrosis? This is some defect in the pancreas. What gives it to them? Did God make it? Did God create cystic fibrosis? Does God level down on the pancreas of an unborn child and say, yours, because you did something bad, you're being punished? Is God punishing the parents? No, you see, this is an impersonal force coming through the consciousness of the parents, totally unknown to them. Something is happening in the invisible world mind, and it translates through the consciousness of the parents as a faulty pancreas in a child. That same force coming through the consciousness of the child later inevitably makes it run in front of an automobile, or makes an automobile drive down and hit it. No one is to blame. We better get to know that force, and that's why we're carefully detailing how these things come about. Now, all of the child diseases are transmitted not through viruses, not through human errors, but through this impersonal force, this impersonal world belief, this impersonal mortal mind, which is the counterfeit mind of the Father. You might say it's the mind which is like a shadow of your body. As your body forms a shadow walking into the sun, if that shadow became alive and acted as you, it would be what we're trying to see is what happens when there is a world mind. It is a shadow of the divine mind. And this shadow is polarized. It's brought into a sensitivity, and now it becomes and individualizes itself as the mind that you think is your mind. It individualizes itself as the mind that your parent thought was his mind and her mind. Each human mind is just another name for this shadow world mind individualized. And through it comes the beliefs, which are all an imitation of the divine image and likeness. This complete imitative mind, which at best can only reproduce a fraction of that which it is shadowing, produces the human race, produces the material world, produces the complete physical structure that we call our world. And as our parents, unaware of this, become a party to it, unknowingly transmitting through themselves the imitative beliefs of this impersonal, universal mind, they bring forth not the child of God, but the imitation child of God. And even when that child at the age of 12 comes into its own consciousness, as you did when you were 12, you still come under the belief, which is now the consciousness of your past human selves instead of the consciousness of your parents' human selves. You come out from under your parents' human beliefs, but you come into your own human beliefs of past lives accumulated into this present life. And you are still in the imitative mind, although you are now free from the bondage to your parents' consciousness. Oh, many lingering remnants remain, but you are basically now operating under your own human consciousness, no longer under your parents' human consciousness, but you're still in bondage to the impersonal universal mind. It has actually produced individual bodies on this earth, all of which are not under the grace of God, the guidance of God, the life, the continuity of God, because they were not created by God. And mankind has not known this, and mankind will continue to die and be reborn into another form, always thinking my mother and my father brought me into this world. And no mother and no father ever brought anyone into this world. There is an impersonal force that birthed this nation, this world of nations, and it is continuing to do so. And it is the same mind which eventually cannot sustain itself. And so in you, as it comes through, it forms your body, which you had credited to your parents. It forms your body. And ultimately, the mind of you, which was also formed of this universal impersonal mind, is no longer able to transmit the beliefs of that world mind, and your body begins to deteriorate. The world mind can no longer sustain your body because it can no longer sustain your mind. Your body deteriorates. Ultimately, it either goes into a coma or it just dies, because it has never been a reality. It has always been an outpicturing of the universal world belief coming through its own creation called your human mind, and externalizing its world belief through your human mind, which to the degree of your past experiences, conditions that world belief to make you appear just as much different than your neighbor, whose individual mind conditions the same world belief into his individual appearance. Always one world belief coming through individual minds is conditioned by the various experiences of that individual mind, so that each of us appears different. Now, this is a backlog. Let's look at disease. Let's see that disease, then, is as much a product of the false, impersonal, universal mind as the body that we appear in. And let's see how Jesus does this. Because all that we are saying is just a fraction of the consciousness that stood there looking at the children who came to him, who were either dead or dying. Let's see how, as he stood there watching the daughter of a Jewish nobleman, what was going on in his mind. Here was this girl, age 12. Now, that was the very age when Jesus spoke in the temple and taught the elders. That was the very age when little Samuel was so advanced that he began to prophesy. 12. 12, the age when this girl was really coming into her own human consciousness, out of the consciousness of her parents. And they were going to bury that child, because she was dying, and then she was dead. And we see that only one person in the wide, wide world at that time could have stood there and had to stand there for you and I to be given a timeless truth, so that at this very moment, the truth of what he knew then could come to us, so that we would do much more than simply raise a child of 12 from death, but rather that we would lift the veil of ignorance through which a child for 12 full years is completely misunderstood by its own parents, seen with false eyes by its own parents, seen as a life that can die by its own parents. This is that moment for us when we are brought to timeless truth. For we see a child allegedly dead. And if this child were ours, we would be in the same situation as these parents who were completely grief-stricken and helpless. That which they had cherished 12 years before at the moment of birth, that which they had clasped to their bosoms and said, "We have brought a child into the world." That fatal error. That fatal error was now being paid for 12 years later when that same child was dead. Now, Jesus wasn't telling us that he was going to raise this child from the dead. He was telling us that every parent on this earth has made the identical error. Every single one. The exceptions you can count on one hand. They all had clasped this child to their bosom. They had all said, "Look what we have done. We have brought a new life into this world. Our own flesh, our own blood, out of nowhere. We are miracle workers. We have great power to bring life into this world." And then, although their child may not die at the age of 12, for those first 12 years, they completely do not know their own child. That which they think is their own child, they haven't the slightest idea that the child is the very same age that they are. That the child is the very same substance that they are. That the child is the very light of the Father. That the life of that child did not begin with a birth certificate. And not knowing this, not knowing who that child is, they see it as flesh and blood, and in that moment they have sentenced it to the ills of flesh and blood. It now is open to the list of child diseases. It's going to get its share. It may not be mumps, it may not be smallpox, it may not be this or that. It may be some of the more serious ones. Why? Because flesh and blood is the product not of God, but of the imitation of God. Of the false, imitative, universal mind, which is but the shadow of the divine. It has placed that little bundle of humanity there, and it will continue to rule that little bundle of humanity with a rod of iron, making it subject to its share of all of the evils of this world until the very moment when it can no longer sustain it and it will disappear from the face of the earth and die. Unless the mother, the father, or that child itself comes out of the illusion that it is flesh and it is blood, that it is human, that it is mortal, that it is man or woman created. Until it does that, until one of the parents does that, or the child itself, it will always be subject to the ignorance of God. It will always be subject to disease. It will always be subject to problems. It will always be subject to wondering, why am I here and what will I accomplish and how shall I do it? And the reason is that this child is nothing but a repetition of its own past lives, come back in search of something, in search of the very thing that its parents are denying to it, itself, its reality. Now you see, these words are difficult. They were difficult to understand when Jesus stood there and said, "She is not dead, she is asleep." He had first taken the precaution to empty the room of all of the weepers and the wailers, of all of the minstrels and the flute players. They had picnics, you know, at these funerals, only they didn't call them picnics. They wailed and they wept. They hired orchestras to make all kinds of sad lamentations. And when Jesus said, "She is not dead, she sleepeth," they laughed. And those who scorned the truth, he ordered out. This was no place now for God to show through unbelief. But the parents, they remained. A very wise man said the reason the parents remained was because they still really didn't know any truth. But Jesus was going to prepare them so that when this child did return, they would be prepared to help her know herself. They would not be alarmed by the miracle. Even though he did tell them to tell no man what you have seen. He pledged them to secrecy because of one thing alone. He knew they could not explain what had happened. They didn't have the slightest idea what had happened. Only Jesus knew. Jesus knew, and this is what you and I must learn that he knew. He knew the identity of the child was not what the parents thought it was. It was in flesh and blood. That which had been born to the parents was something other than they thought it was, something other than what they had seen with their human eyes. Had not his own mother known the truth, which he knew at that moment? This child was not born of a human mother and a human father. It had been born of a virgin. It had been born of a virgin consciousness. The reality of this child, in spite of what mortal mind was showing forth, was the pure, undiluted, eternal Spirit of God. At that moment, it was rescued from the false concepts which would bury it. Concepts which had seen it as matter and now saw it as dead matter. And it had never been living matter or dead matter. It had never been matter at all. It had always been what it was, and only his human consciousness knew the truth. It was the very life of God itself. Deathless and timeless and birthless. The reality of the child had never been born. It was forever. It had predated all human time. And this, you see, is something we must do in ourselves. We must take the false birth out of our minds, not only for our children, but for ourselves. The flesh and blood body was never born. Now, if you can do that for your child, you're doing for it what Jesus did for for Jairus' daughter. If you can do it for yourself, you're doing what Jesus would have done for you. If you can do it for yourself, you're doing that which you will have to do some other day unless you do it now. Each one must come to the realization that I could never be born, for I am the life of the Father, the Spirit of the Father, the substance of the Father, the light of the Father, the very being of the Father, who is timeless and infinite and can never be born. You must see that what has happened is that a false imitative consciousness called world belief has individualized itself as your parents and their parents and their parents, right on back to the Garden of Eden, right on back to the moment when the false world belief individualized as Adam, as Eve, or whatever names you wish to give to the first human appearances on this earth. And the repetition through their false consciousness of new births and new births and new births, each living under the false consciousness of its parents, then emerging into its own false consciousness, then returning after death to begin again the cycle of ignorance of God. This is where we stand this moment. This is where Jesus stood 2,000 years ago. And this must be broken. It must be broken in you, for yourself, in you, for your children, in you, for your grandchildren, in you, for every person who walks the face of the earth, be they child or adult. You must look through the form to see that that which stands before me was never born. Never was it born. For never has there been a birth in the history of the kingdom of God. Never has one birth occurred in the kingdom of God, and there is no other kingdom. The false imitative world is where birth occurs. To be reborn is to overcome the belief in human birth. To be reborn is to come to that point in consciousness where you have nullified, crucified, annihilated the belief in your present consciousness that you were born of the flesh of a mortal parent. For that belief is the lie about your own immortal self and is the lie about the child of God, which is indestructible, which is forever, which is as perfect as your Father, which is in heaven. Now, this is a difficult thing to do, but it's less difficult when you know it must be done, and even less difficult when you know why it must be done. For the complete history of man is his search for his true self, and conditioned at birth, he is unable to break through that conditioning to find his true self. In one of the Gospels, although this is reported in three of them, in Mark, Jesus says to the little girl as she awakens, "Talitha kuma." And though it's not mentioned in the Gospel of Luke or of Matthew, there they merely say, it says, "Maid, arise." But it really means, "Little lamb, little lamb." He was the Lamb of the Father, you see. And here he is seeing one who is doing something quite different than just being resurrected into a new human consciousness. He is seeing one that he has helped come into, Christy. The resurrection of the daughter of Jairus is the illumination of that child into the realization that I am not flesh and blood, I am the living spirit of the Father. An important thing to know there is that Jesus, standing there before this child, is really the outpicturing of that child's own inner spirit. The inner Christ of that child appears to us as Jesus, and the realization of Jesus on the outside is really the Christ realization of the girl within. We must make a breakthrough. We must find a place where we can break through the false human consciousness of ourselves in order to find this invisible Christ of our being, which is not subject to world belief. Now, when Jesus stood there, this was a repetition of other forms of resurrection which took place in various moments of his ministry, and in each case there was a complete realization of the allness of God. Now, this realization of the allness of God allows for no human selfhood to be born or to die. And I think we can have an experience which will enable us to see just a measure of what we will each have to go through and what he already had gone through in the wilderness where he sat in the wilderness of human belief, slowly letting himself dissolve this belief through the Spirit intervening. And as the human beliefs in him dissolved, he was able then to come forth after 40 days with a spiritual consciousness which could see no man after the flesh, no dying child after the flesh, no child to be raised up, only the ever-present invisible Christ. Now let's do this. There is a world belief that has put you in a chair here, and there is also the breaking through of the light, which to a measure has dissolved some of the world belief, still leaving you in a physical form, subject to some of the world beliefs coming through the physical form which world belief itself has put here. Now, in between world belief and your physical form is your human mind. World belief has formed your human mind so that it may transmit itself through the human mind it has formed into your body, making your body, guiding your body, misleading your body. And this sequence has to be broken. When you break this sequence, for a moment, you find something very interesting will happen. When you break this sequence, the human mind is no longer acting as a channel for world belief And so the human body, for that moment, is freed from world belief, freed from the appearance of death or disease or whatever may be attacking it or seeming to attack it. Now, if you had something wrong and blood was flowing out of your arm, you would apply a tourniquet. You would take something and you would wrap it around that arm between the wound and the heart. You would wrap it so tight that the blood flowing would be stopped in the vein or artery which controlled that particular portion of your anatomy, and the blood would not flow out. The tourniquet would have stopped the flow. Now we want to apply a tourniquet to the human mind to stop the flow of world belief through it into the form. And so the tourniquet you apply is the knowledge of truth, and then the great Sabbath, the vast silence in which the human mind is at rest. And when the human mind has been brought to rest, you have applied a tourniquet. And now all of the evil in world belief struggling to move through the human mind finds it's like the blood in your veins that tried to get through, to pour out through the wound. The bandage was too tight, the blood couldn't flow through the veins of the artery. And so here too, the silence is the tourniquet. World belief cannot flow. The human mind has been shut off as a channel. And lo and behold, made arise from your sleep. Or, stretch forth thine arm. Or, pick up thy bed and walk. Now we have a silence imposed upon the world belief that there is evil. And it cannot enter through the silent human mind. And so the human body is momentarily released from world belief. All disease, all problems, even the appearance of death, are thus released. But can you impose this silence upon the human mind? Now the word which describes the silence you must impose upon the human mind to stop the continuity of world belief coming through the human mind into visible form, that silence that you impose is accomplished by a change in consciousness. Now, Jesus had undergone the change in consciousness. And in the change in consciousness, he no longer had a human mind. It wasn't there. He didn't have to impose silence on it anymore. It was dead. He had overcome world belief by overcoming the belief that he had a human mind. He no longer had a human consciousness. And now you must face this. As long as you have a human mind, as long as you have a human consciousness, it will transmit world belief because it is part of world belief. It is formed by world belief. That human mind, that human consciousness is the child of world belief. And it must transmit world belief. Now your tourniquet must be imposed upon it through a change of consciousness which slowly strangles out the belief in the livingness, the reality, the truth of a human mind, of a human consciousness. And you can do this by slow degrees, as you've been doing. And then you can take a step in which you realize that God being all, God being the only self, the one infinite self, the one infinite being, the one infinite life, God could never recreate God as something less than itself. God could never recreate God as something less than its own divinity. God could never dilute God into humanhood. God could never dilute perfection into imperfection. God could never dilute infinite life into temporary life that must die. God could never make the infinite finite. That which is always is. And because God is this infinite one life and there is no other, there could never have been an individual human life to be born or to die or to suffer in between. And now I erase from my consciousness all belief, all memory, all experiences, all ideas, all concepts that had to do with that which happened to the me that apparently was born, for it never was. I am this same eternal self which is one with the Father, never born, never dying. And this is the meaning of Melchizedek. Without birth, without human life, without death, and this is truth. And as you erase it in yourself, as you work with it, you are undoing the lie of the centuries, which has reprojected you time and time again into human form, always blaspheming the truth of the one infinite self, without opposite, without birth, without temporary life, without imperfection, without disease, without death. You are coming into the realization then of the great truth of your own being, and that will occur when you stand forth in the realization that I have never been born. As you feel that come upon yourself, as that realization deepens, you will see that that which was never born could never have suffered the various human sufferings that you think